All right, so this is the 37th in the series, Shaul's death and its aftermath. So Shaul HaMelech died in the same way that he lived, very enigmatically. That is to say, with his method of death, his manner of death, as murky and as unclear as many other things that he did during his life. It generated a very vehement debate as to the halachic propriety of his actions. You recall from last time that Shaul died on the battlefield, essentially a self-inflicted death, falling on his sword in order to avoid capture and disgrace at the hands of the Plishtim. So was it an act of heroism or an act of cowardice? So on that, free people differ. There's no doubt, as we discussed last time, Chazal justified on a number of grounds Shaul's suicide, and it became a paradigm even for Jews committing suicide in medieval times to avoid falling into the hands of the Christians or other tormentors. In this battle, at the end of Shmuel Aleph, so Israel loses not only a melech, a king, but they also lose the upper hand to the Plishtim. And if you think about it, the Plishtim are centered in Gaza, Ashkelon, the Ashdod area, along the Mediterranean coast towards what the southern part of Israel. Shaul dies, and not only is he killed and his son's killed, but the army of Israel is routed and they flee the battlefield, and that takes place in Emek Yisrael, Harei Gilboa. So the reach of the Plishtim extend in, to the heartland of Israel, almost, you know, close to the north, close to the Galil. So they, in fact, at this point, conquered a substantial part of the country. So Israel needs more than a new king. They need, in fact, a new spirit, and they need confidence, and they need a hope, an infusion of hope, and a national and spiritual renewal. So David is the man, but now he is only perceived as a tribal leader, the leader of Shevet Yehudah, not a king. The process of asserting the monarchy and gaining the support of the people begins here in Shmuel Bez and continues throughout Shmuel Bez, and David must win the support of the people. That's the first few brachim. And once his monarchy is stabilized, then he continues on and with the other events of his reign. So David furthers that goal of asserting control over the people through his reaction to Shaul's death, which we'll discuss tonight. There are basically two events. One is questionable as some of Shaul's actions were, and the other is laudable. But both of them, we'll see, serve the purpose of bringing David closer to the people and bring the people closer to David. So they look at him not as he was, first a protege of the king, and then as a rival of the king, the nirdaf, the pursuit of the king, but they see him really as royal material. So when we last left David in Shmuel Aleph, we begin Shmuel Beis tonight, Perek Aleph. He had just defeated Amalek at Ziklag and rescued the captives of the tribe of Yehudah. And note, of course, that Shaul had not succeeded ever in defeating Amalek ultimately, and David will take up that battle. So he rejoices in the victory, and then he receives the news. So look at number one. After Shaul dies, David returns from smiting Amalek. He dwells in Ziklag for 2 days. On the third day, a person comes from the camp who was with Shaul. His clothing is torn. There's dirt on his head, meaning he comes disheveled, We just started. He comes disheveled. And he tells David the news. Vahi bevol David vayipol artzav eishdacho. Comes to David, falls to the ground, bows down. Meaning, he submits himself to the authority of David. He prostrates himself. Vayomer lo David, emi ze tavo. Where are you coming from? Vayomer elov, he said, mimachane Yisrael nimlotti. I have escaped from the camp of Israel. Escaped. Notice Chazal point out how he breaks the news to Shaul very slowly, almost gingerly. First to say he escaped. Implication of escape means that it wasn't a victory. It didn't go as well as they'd hoped. Vayomer lo David, me hayah davar, hagedna li. He says, what happened? Tell me now. Vayomer, and he says, asher nos ha'amin ha'milchama. What's the first thing he says? The people fled the battlefield, meaning to defeat. Vigam harbe nafal minaam, and many people from the nation were killed. Many soldiers were killed. Vayamusu, they fell and they were killed. Vigam Shaul v'Yonasan b'no Mesu. Shaul and Yonasan, his son, were also killed. So now, of course, again, you break bad news to someone, you do it very slowly, almost leading up to it. As they absorb the initial blows, then they're ostensibly able to receive the worst news. Vayomer David el Anar Hamagid lo. David says, naturally wants to verify the information. Ech yadato ki mei shol v'yonasan b'no. How do you know? Now the Nar says as follows. Vayomer Hanar Hamagid lo. So the young man, the messenger, said, Nikro nikresi bahar gilboa v'inei shol nishon al chanisom. He was called to Har Gilboa, where the battle took place, and he saw Shaul leaning on his spear. Vihine arechev uvalei parashim hidbiku, and the chariots and the cavalry of the Plishtim overtaking him. Vayifen acharo vayireni, he turned around and he saw me. Vayikroi lai v'omar hineni, and he called to me, and I said, here I am. Note, you'll recall, this does not appear in the previous parak that we learned, that Shaul had this conversation with anyone. The implication left from our parak is that Shaul asked his armor bearer for a spear, a sword. He fell on his sword, and that's where he died. Here the Nar tells a different story. But Nar Hamagid, Hamagid Lo, the one who's relating the information. Right. He could have said Vayomer Anar.
Exactly.
Right. Vayomer li mi oto. So Shaul had said to him, who are you? Vomar elov, I said to him, Amaleki anochi. I'm a descendant of Amalek. Vayomer elai, he said to me, Amod no alai umosaseni. Please stand over me and kill me. I mean, he finished me off. Umosaseni, ki achazani ashavots, because I'm gripped by the throes of death. Ki cholod nafshi bi, I still have a little life within me. But of course he was afraid of being captured and subjected to humiliation at the hands of the Plishtim. So the Nara says, Vamoda love, Vamosaseyu. I stood over him and I killed him. Meaning he probably took the sword and stabbed him, finished him off. Ki yodati ki lo yichi achrei niflo, because I knew he would not live after he fell on his sword, meaning he was dying anyway. All I did was hasten his death. V'akacha nezer asher rosho v'atzoda asher olzro. I took the crown on his head and the bracelet on his arm. V'aviyem al-adoni heina. I brought them to you in deference to David, who he knew would be Shaul's successor. All right. He offers the crown and the bracelet to David. Now, Chazal differ as to the veracity of his account. Did it actually happen this way? Like you said, it's possible. The other possibility is that he's not telling the truth, but he's telling this story to David so as to ingratiate himself to the new king, knowing that Shaul had been David's enemy. So the enemy of your enemy is your friend. So now he killed Shaul. Presumably David would reward him as the one who killed David's nemesis. It was a fatal miscalculation for this Nara Maleki. What's the immediate response? The pasuk says, "Vayachazek David bivigadav vayikraim." David took hold of his garments and he tore them. Vegam kol ha'anoshim asher ito, and all the people with David, they tore their garments as well. Look at 4. We derive halacha from this. The Radak says, Mikan lamdu rabosenu zal shechayv adam lekro al nasi v'al avbeistin. A person is obligated to kriya not just for relative, but when the nasi dies, when the avbeistin dies also. Shaul was the nasi, prince, king. Yonasan was the avbeistin. V'chein al rov tzibur. So too, if there's an event which kills a substantial number of Jews, you have to tear your garments over it as well. So we limit it really to a relative. Mikra din, it should be for a great person who dies, the Nasi, or if many Jews die. I remember when Ramosha Feinstein Zatzel died, so we discussed this point in the yeshiva, because as the Posek Hador, he had a din of Nasi. So the question was, do we tear Kri at that point? You see, it wasn't widely discussed. I remember the yeshivas, 1986, so it's Yartzeit is Tiny Zester. So we were discussing it at the time. But you see, there is such halacha. If the nasi dies, to tear one's garments. And you see, that's what David did over here. What else does he do? Vayispidu vayivku vayatsumar orav. All of them, they started wailing, crying, fasting until nightfall. Al Shaul v'al Yonasan b'no, over the death of Shaul and Yonasan his son. And for God's people and the house of Israel, who fell by the sword. Am Hashem, Chazal say, that is Shaul and Yonasan, and Beis Yisrael, that's the Hamonam, that's who they were lamenting. Alright, what were the tears about? So you see, we'll see the greatness of David throughout, that even though his nemesis was dead, he never perceived Shaul as his enemy. And once someone dies, especially someone whose behavior was, shall we say, problematic over the years, in many areas, but certainly vis-a-vis David, you see he had a different perception. And whatever sins Shaul may have committed, his death is atones for them. Misa mechaperas. So, for example, Rashi says in number 2, pasuk tes, Shaul said, "Achozani ashovot." I'm gripped by the throes of death. Achidani retisa. He says, "I'm caught by retisa." Restis means dread, panic. Umedrash agada. What's shovot? Mishum avon ha-kohanim she'harag b'chasu b'hen k'sonis tashbeitz. Tashbeitz, Shavuot's a play on words, that they recognize Shaul's death here, just like Shmuel Hanavi had told him, was a retribution for Shaul's killing the kohanim. So you see, once someone commits a sin, and he's punished, and the punishment atones for the sin, so they're tzaddik. We don't linger over a person's past, the person's sins. If the person is now righteous, a person is following the Torah, or a person sinned and then was punished, so we say Mises Mechaperas over most Averos, just a handful that are not. See the Rambam in the first parak of Hilchos Tshuva. But Misa, death, will atone for almost every sin. So therefore, Shaul is again, he's Shaul HaMelech, he's a tzaddik, so David mourns him. It's a kapara. Who was this Nara Maleki? Before we see what happened to him. So Rashi says in number 2, in Pasuk Beis, Hini Ish Bomin Hamachaneh, Yesh bepsikto shezeh doeg. The Medrash says it was doeg hadomi. Ve'enam yishav alibi. Rashi doesn't accept it. It doesn't accept it for obvious reasons. If it was doeg, David knew him. So why would he ask, who are you? So there are other opinions. Look at number 5 for a moment. The Yalkut Shimoni. The Yalkut says, Nizkar Remez Kuf Memalev, Nizkar David Bososho Mashenemar Lemosh Rabbeinu. You know what, we'll get back to that in a moment. Skip down a few lines. Omer B'Yitzchak, the 5th line. B'noshel Doeg HaDomi Hoya. It wasn't Doeg. It was Doeg's son. So now we understand David may not have recognized him. Doeg was called HaDomi because he lived there. He was from that territory. Vamar Lo'ar, so it was the son of Doeg. And now we come to the real point. What exactly does David do? He kills him. Vayom Pasuk Gimel. Vayomer David al Anar Magid Lo. He says to the young man who had related this story, Emi Zoto, where are you from? So he repeats again, Vayomer Benish Ger Amaleki Anochi. I'm the son of an Amalekite convert. Vayomer Lo David, it comes to the issue. Immediate, swift justice. Eich Lo Yoreso L'Shloach Yodcho L'Shacheses Mashiach Hashem. How did you not fear to raise your hand to destroy the anointed one of God? And what gave you the right to kill Melech Yisrael? Vayikra David lachat mehana arim vayomer. David called to one of his lads and said to them, Gash pegabo, come forward and strike him. Vayakehu vayamos. So they struck him down and they killed him. Known as killing the messenger because of the message. Vayomer lo David, Damcha Roshecha. David said, your blood is on your head. Kificha ono v'cha lemor, because your mouth testified against you, saying, Onochi mosati es Mashiach Hashem. I killed God's anointed. He admitted that he did it, so David executed very quick justice. The question is, of course, how and why. So now if we go back to the Yalkut, number 5, Nizkar David Bososho Mashenemar LeMoshe Rabbeinu. David recalled what had been said to Moshe Rabbeinu in Yonah Diyoma, it's Parsha Zohar, this coming Shabbos. Im Yavo Echod Mikolmo Solo Mizgaya Shikablu Oso. If a non-Jew of any nation comes forward, wants to convert, you accept them. But the seed of Amalek we do not accept. So he said to him, that your blood is on your head because you're on Amaleki. Timchez zecher Amalek mitachas hashamayim lo tishkoch. Milchamol Hashem ba'amalek midor dor. We have to exterminate every trace of Amalek. God wages an eternal battle against Amalek from generation to generation. L'kachnem ar midor dor. In every generation, Amalek appears, we have to kill him. So according to this, according to the Yalkut Shimoni, David exercised the prerogative of the Tzibor to kill any person from Amalek, so he killed this Amaleki as well. Still, as the Mechilta B'Shalach, at the end of the Sedra, makes a similar point. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, David says the same thing. Nizkar David, he remembered what Moshe had said. All right? Oh, it's the same point. Mechilta makes the same point as the Yalkut. Okay. The real question is the one that the Malbim asks in number 6. How could it be? How does David just kill someone based on his own confession? A confession is not admissible in a Jewish court, much less grounds for punishment. And how could he kill someone without any witnesses or without any warning? All those things are required by the Jewish court. So how is it possible that would be done? Now, the number of possibilities present before we get to the Mefarshim, just based on what we've read up till now. David killed him as the Yalkut Mechilta indicate, because he said he was Amaleki. Not directly connected to this event, But granted, the context was this event, and the fact that he killed Shaul gave David a pretext to kill him extrajudicially without having a trial, simply because he was Amalek. Or he killed him because of the Doeg connection. Either, as the Yalkut says, Rabbi Yitzhak, that he was Doeg Adomi or Doeg's son. So Doeg represented a threat. Certainly, a son would also represent a threat because they were allied with Shaul. But we have to understand a little more than that. The Malm asked the question. Let's look at the Rambam in Hilchos Sanhedrin. Takes this up. Perkas Halacha Vav. Gzeres Hakosav Hi She'ein Memisin Beis Din Velo Malkin Es Odnam Bodas Piv. Gzeres Hakosav that we do not kill people. Beis Din cannot kill. Even give Malkos based on a confession. El Al Pi Shnayim Edim. But you need two witnesses to the event. Why? It's obvious, because confessions can be coerced. Happens not infrequently. And you could have also a person, Meshuga, confesses to a variety of crimes. Every time there's a famous killing, by the way. And there's a famous killing, at least in New York, it happens all the time. They don't publicize it anymore. You'll have 10, 20, 30 people surrendering themselves at Police Plaza so they should gain the notoriety. So you question them always. That's why they never release details about a spectacular homicide until after they've made the arrest, because they ask the person for the details, and if they can't relate the details, it means they weren't there. But you have Meshugam confessing. So that's why you can't accept a confession halacha. So how did Yoshua kill Achon, which we discussed a few years back? Or David Legera Maleki, how did David kill this Amalek convert, Badas B.M., through their confession? So the Rambam answers, it was the Rasha Paisa. It was an exigent circumstance. It was necessitated by the moment. O Din Malchus Oyo, or simply the royal prerogative, as the Rambam says elsewhere, Gemara says the king can kill anybody he wants at any time, even without the approval of Sanhedrin, in order to exercise dominion and to show, in fact, that he's the king. Because it can't be a brutal murder. It has to be in some context. Usually the context is a rebellion. But that's Din Malchus. The king has certain prerogatives. So we'll discuss the difference between Din Malchus here and Harasha in a moment. So what exactly happened? What was the Harasha? Why would he kill some? Why would he kill this? What did the kid do, really? He came and it's related that Shaul died. And he claimed to have hastened Shaul's death by a few moments. What did he really do? Was it worth the death penalty? So the Malbim explains in 6, going back there, Pasuk Tezayin, Domcha Roshecha, Imnemar Shehoy Amaleki Mamash. If indeed he was an Amaleki, then it's not so troubling. Sheben Noach Nerag B'lo Asra. A Ben Noach can be killed without warning. Venerag afala treifo, he killed, he's put to death even for killing someone whose death is imminent. Venerag bedayin echod of eid echod, or killed with one dayin or one aid. And yeshloma shuadin shenerag bodas atzmo. You can make the same case, same argument, that the standards of proof are lesser for a ben Noach, so he could be put to death also for, based on his own confession, Kamosha Nergal Pikaro, like he could be convicted based on testimony of a relative. In fact, some of Rishonim say that Rambam quotes this in the Mora, that unlike under our judicial system regarding Jews, a guy can be executed based on even circumstantial evidence, compelling circumstantial evidence. The Melech has the power to execute based on that. So you see the standards differ. So that's if he was not Jewish. That's what David said. Your own mouth testified against you. If we say he's a Jew, then nerag mi din amalchus. What's the din malchus? Kidei shelo yazidu laharim yad b'melech. So as to set an example, what's that? He said an example. Nobody has the right to assassinate the Melech Yisrael. ulekabalas chazal shoya doeg shoya chayev misa mikvar ot novir konim. According to the opinion that says that the Nar Maleki was actually doeg, so now he's chayev misa anyway. Shal ze omar domecha v'loshen rabim, where it says domcha, it actually says domei with just the yud. And you know, the original text said domcha, as if it said domecha, dalad mem yud chav, as opposed to domcha. So domcha means your blood. Domecha means your bloods. So you're guilty for many people being killed, if that's doeg. Ramaz lo shagam shal harega shol ein adam neman al atzmo. So it wasn't just that you killed Shaul, you killed also the Kohanim. Right, it's a little, like Rashi says, a little far-fetched to say it was Doeg or Domi, or even his relative. I want to focus on that one point the Malbim made. Look at number 7, because the Ralbag makes a similar point. The Ralbach says, a puzzle, Madua Tziva David Harga, why did he kill him? Vine Yasazebertson Shaul Vakoshasel. He did this at Shaul's request. Elisha Chuba Bazay Nenam Mimasha Yiksha. The answer is not what you're asking. If a person says to his friend, hit me, and the friend hits him, he's chayiv. Why? Because certainly if you kill the king, ki divrei harav divrei talmud divrei mishomim, if the Torah says not to do something and your friend says to do it, so you listen to the Torah. V'hinei yizhira Torah dovar ha-masa koshken ha-mitas ha-melachim. So the Torah warned us not to kill, certainly not to kill the Melech Yisrael. V'yaf al pisho ha-yasham edim v'yamar shiyas atzmo v'yam ibn ezeh patr b'din, even though there were no witnesses, and he confessed himself. So me'ikra din, he's not, he can't be convicted. Hine also David zeh l'rasha. David did this based on the circumstances. Shelo yikalu ha-anashim l'shloch yodo b'malchus. So people should not be quick to raise their hand. It shouldn't be a trivial thing to attack the Melech Yisrael. Lazos hasiboba eino nizar mishloach yad b'shol. This was the very reason why David himself did not kill Shaul when he had the opportunity twice. Kishoy b'ma'oro v'afo pishoy erodfo. Even though Shaul was a rodef of David, David was clearly justified in killing him. Nevertheless, ha'imavate lahargo, he didn't kill him. So you see, in fact, this is an essential concept, and it reveals the greatness of David. So we may think that what he did here was questionable. In fact, David made a very powerful statement. Here, Shaul was trying to kill him, and yet David never perceived him as the enemy, as we've noted on several occasions. David himself could have killed Shaul, but he didn't. Why didn't he when he had the chance? Because assassination is not an option. Assassination of Melech Yisrael is not an option. Because if we would kill each king or each leader that we don't like, there'll never be a leader who serves out his term. Because every leader has opponents. Every leader has enemies. Even David Melch Yisrael had enemies. So if we're going to accept as an option, like it is, for example, in the Arab world or in African society, that if you don't like the leader, you stage a coup and kill the leader, and then you take over, you become the despot. If that's to be Malchus Yisrael, then that can't be. So you see, where did David choose to make the statement? Not about himself, you know, killing people who might raise a hand against him, but against those who tried to kill his enemy, tried to kill the one who was killing him. Because in fact, it's a terrible, situation. Now, we recognize we had in our own lifetime, just a little less than a decade ago, the Prime Minister of Israel was killed. So you see, in fact, you can look at it as a terrible thing from a number of reasons, but essentially the Rabbag is saying here that it harms the society in which it takes place, because one could have legitimate grievances against Rabin, and legitimate grievances against Peres and Netanyahu and Barak and Sharon, you're going to kill everybody. So then you have a brutal, violent society. So that's why you see David is stating here that in terms of the first rule of Malchus, that even he did not exercise that option. Because for Jews, if that's to be used, then we'll have no people. We'll have no nation. We'll be destroyed. Yes?
Isn't that exactly what happened about the trial at one point? They were assassinating king after king.
That was the decline. They were assassinating king after king. And look at Gedaliah. Well, Gedaliah was the governor of Judea. He was killed. So then Yishuv Eretz Yisrael ended. That's some Gedaliah. Yishuv Eretz Yisrael ended. Yes? You see, they never tried. They didn't try. I mean, maybe they tried to kill him. I don't think they tried to kill him. It's just not an option. Other Sanhedrin can exercise power. You can depose a king through Sanhedrin if they're powerful enough. But for a person to assume individually responsibility to kill the king, and notice the extenuating circumstances here. He wasn't killing Shaul the Amaleki in order to enthrone David. He was killing him based on Shaul's request. Help me die. I don't want to be taken captive. And I'm going to die anyway in a few moments. So David said, Afal Pichain, when it comes to Melch Yisrael, so Echlo Yareso L'Shloch Yodcho L'Shaches Mashiach Hashem. And how can then you go boast? How can you boast? Anochi Mosatis Mashiach Hashem. I killed God's anointed. That cannot be. Now the Rabbah continues that it seems that, one second, it seems that this Nar was not a Ger Tzedek, all right, in which case it makes his death even easier to understand. But nevertheless, the point that David was making, the Rabbah takes out of the context, as Malm does in the second reason, out of Amalek. It's not the war against Amalek. It's rather the war for the stability of Malchus Yisrael. And if a precedent is established that one can kill the king for any reason, then Malchus Yisrael would not survive, as Mimi indicated. It did not survive for this very reason. Now, in fact, if that's the case, it's not cruelty to the messenger that we have here, but it's a limud teaching to all Jews. Even if the melech is a rodev, no one has the right to raise his hand against Mashiach Hashem. So it's a very important limud l'doros. So David himself did not kill Shaul for personal reasons. What is this then? That's the din malchus. Din malchus means, so Rasha means he killed him based on the exigency of the moment. Emergency situation. Couldn't let this person live. The din malchus is to establish the norm of the royal house of Israel, that assassination is not an option. If the melech is a rasha, you have to find some other way of dealing with him. But you can't kill him, because otherwise we will not survive. Din malchus means, in this context, upholding the honor of royalty generally, even if they're bums on occasion. Can't say that publicly, but even if they're no good, for posterity's sake. So Malchus as an institution should survive. You can't identify the Melech anymore as a person. The Melech becomes a Melech. He's a symbol, he's a figure, even more than he's a person. Som tasim alecha Melech, shetei mos alecha. You have to fear the king. Whoever he is, you have to have awe of the king. Whoever the king might be, even a Rasha. So therefore, even in this case, he had no right to do that. That's the first point. I think in retrospect, it sounds harsh, the treatment of this Ger Maleki. But David was correct in laying down the law. Yes? Right. That's correct. That's correct. So what was the mistake that he made? Boasting.
That's the thing.
He never would have killed him.
What?
He wouldn't. David wouldn't have killed him.
No, but I'm talking about
Hamagid. Oh,
Hamagidlo.
That's correct. What does it mean? That's boasting. That's what it is. That was all he had to say. Was he? How does he know? He saw Shaul leaning on his sword, dead. The fact that he said, Picha ana b'cholei mor, anochi mosati es Mashiach, I killed him. That was his death sentence. Once a person is able to brag that he killed Melech Yisrael, then you have to make him an example for generations. But that's not the way to treat a Melech Yisrael. So even though Shaul had asked him, if the guy had the seichel, he wouldn't have said anything. I saw him dead, he was dead. So the question is, the Ger Amaleki, did he convert? You know, I mentioned the Yalkut, the Mechilta. Others disagree that even an Amaleki can convert. All right. Question is, can he become a full Jew or just a Ger Toshav? Or at a later stage in history, I've discussed this on Shabbos a few years ago. At a later stage in history, after Sancheiriv came and engaged in mass population transfers, so no nation dwelled in its original soil, Bos Sancheiriv uvilgal kolumos, then we really don't know who are genetically Amaleki anymore. So therefore, even if someone is living there, he's able to convert. Based on that, the Gemara says, Mi b'nei bonav shel Haman lomdu Torah b'bnei Brak. Haman's own descendants converted to Yadus and taught Torah in b'nei Brak. I think I know where they learned, by the way. They're still alive. Anyway, that's the first point. Second point. What happens next? Vayekonen David es akino azos. David then begins this dirge, this elegy. Al Shaul val yonasam beno. So the reality of David's loss, that he lost not only Shaul HaMelech, who'd been his mentor, the one who brought him into the palace originally, but he also lost his soulmate, Yehonasan. That reality slowly sinks in, and then you see the other great aspect of David's life, who we'll describe later as Ne'im Zmiros Yisrael, the sweet singer of Israel. So now you see the beauty, the depth of the message, and the poetic nature of David HaMelech, David this warrior. So he begins the dirge. Vayomer, he said, Lilamei b'nei Yehuda koshes, to teach the children of Yehuda how to use the bow and arrow. Hinei chesuva sefer hayoshar. Behold, this is written in the book of uprightness. Very strange and cryptic phrase. What is he talking about? So if you turn the page, by the way, this is number 10, the whole kino, and we'll be turning back and forth to the Mefarshim on the other side. So what does this have to do with anything? How is this a eulogy for Shaul and Yonasan to teach Bnei Yehuda how to use the arrow? So a number of pshatim. Look first, 13, the Radak. Yesh mefarshim, mikan va'elach tzarch lamed levnei Yehuda keshes. Kevin shemesu bo shovi yonason, yesh lefarsh gizeinim in akinos. Radak says, this first phrase is not part of the eulogy. It's an introductory remark, saying what? Until now they could rely on the valor and strength of Shaul and Yonason. Now Bnei Yehuda, they have to learn to fight themselves. They have to know how to use the keshes. Hinech suvash sefer yeshua. Behold, this is the book of the upright. What's that book? So the Gemara says in Avodah Zarah, Daf Chafei Amud Aleph, found the number 11. My sefer yeshua. Armichia bar Abba b'Yochanan, Zez sefer av mitzvah Yaakov, Shinikru Yesharim. It's the book of the Torah, the book of our fathers, who are called the upright. As Bilam said, Tamos Nafshi Mos Yisharim. V'hecha Ramiza, so how do we know L'lamed L'vnei Yehuda Keshes? How do we know they have to become warriors too? Because it says in Yaakov's Bracha, Yehuda Ato Yoducha Achecha, your brothers will acknowledge you, serve you. Yotcha Be'oref Oivecha, your hand will be on the neck of your enemies. So in fact, Yehud himself will not just be royalty, but will have to be the fighting element of Israel as well. And the Gemara has some Ve'zoi Malacha Shetzricha Yad Keneged Oref, which type of warfare requires a hand opposite the neck? So that is Keshes, archery. So you have to lift your hand in back, one hand in front of your neck, one hand in back of the neck. No archers here, apparently. They don't have many archers left today. You don't see one in New York that often. So that is Keshas. Or Sefer Yashas Mishnah Torah, Sefer Dvarim, Yashar Batov, Ezoi Malacha Shetzricha Shtei Adayim, which Malacha requires two hands, is Yodov Rov Lo, that is Keshas. You need two hands to shoot a bow and arrow, as opposed to a sword requires just one hand. Or Sefer Yashas Sefer Shoftim, Isha Yashar Bein of Yasa. So why then is it called, what's the reference to Keshes here? All right, Lamandas, Doris B'nai Yisrael, L'lamda Milchama, Ve'izoy Melach, Milchama Shetzricha Limud, Hevim Ezek Keshes. So Keshes, archery is difficult. It's a difficult form of warfare, but it's very successful. Because you as we'll see, you shoot at a distance, and you're able to inflict grievous harm on your enemy. So according to Radak, what David is telling his men, not part of the eulogy. Rather, he's comforting his tribe that they will learn how to fight. Lamei livnei Yehuda keshes. Continuing on, kodem shechel konen aleim omar lanashov, al tisyashu min atovo. Don't give up hope. Don't give up the prospect of good things happening. Vayirach levavchem. Don't become frightened because Shaul and Yonasan died. Ki keshes hamelchama biyad b'nei Yehuda. B'nei Yehuda can fight. V'lohem yagvura. And that's what the Torah says, Yodcha ba'oref oivecha. So he started with, who was the eulogy to? Who was the audience? B'nei Yehuda, the ones with him in Siklag. So he was encouraging them not to despair over the death of Shaul and Yonasan, that they could confront any enemy in front of them. Other pshatim as well. Look at number 19. Parish of Abarbanel. He says, Apon HaShlishi, there's a number of pshatim, and this appears most correct to him. Sheroi lohem sheitztaru v'yivku mun ha'ra'azos. David was teaching his men that they had to mourn, even though Shaul had been their target for a long time, and they had been on the run from Shaul. Im mivas am Yisrael v'im bavur Shaul bonav. They have to cry both for Shaul and for the people. Even though they were hated and pursued, it's not because of their own might, but it's because of the diminution of the glory of Israel, which is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So that's what he said. He says, Keshes, like kasher, hardness. He had to teach them sadness, worry. They shouldn't be happy that Shaul died. On the contrary, never gloat over the death of a rival. Also, number 12. What else did he teach him? Yerushalmi in Masech HaSoto. Vayomer lulamei livnei Yehuda keshes lo mistavro de lo lulamei b'nei Yehuda mihoya. If he was not going to teach them, who would teach them? What's the pshat? So David taught them another thing. When the righteous die, the enemies of Israel come forward and start to attack us. We see this a few times in Tanakh. The first case of Aaron HaKohen, when Aaron died, right after he was buried, by Shmaknani Melech Harod, they heard that Aaron died, that Tzadik dies, the people are weakened, despondent, they feel vulnerable. That's when the enemy comes forward. That's what he's telling them. Now we have to learn keshes, because now the enemy will be emboldened. As it is, they've conquered half the land. But they killed the king too. Melch Yisrael is dead. So now we have to strengthen ourselves. And he says also, the other point, which is worthy of mentioning, if we are a worthy people, then Hashem Yilochem Lochem. This shot makes it part of the eulogy. If we're worthy, God fights our battles. Like the original conquest of Canaan, God fought no casualties. God fought our battles. But if we're Beinonim, if we're not completely tzaddikim, then we have to fight ourselves b'derech hateva. If you're going to fight b'derech hateva, that requires training, and tactics, strategy, l'lamei b'nei Yehuda koshas. You have to teach them. Hinei hich suvah b'sefer Hinech Suval Sefer Yeshar. That's what's written in the Torah. The Torah says God will fight our battles if we're worthy. But if not, doesn't mean we have to be killed. It means you have to go into battle prepared. And that's what the Torah demands. The army of Israel, be prepared. What are the themes of the eulogy? Like you find repeated in Kinos. In fact, it says, Vaikoneg Dovidus Akinozos. If I remember correctly, it's the first time it's used in this context. We're familiar with Kinos from Tisha B'Av. What's a kino? A kino is a lamentation, but it's really an expression of two basic emotions, grief and shock. Grief and shock. Grief over the event, and shock, echo, over how this event could have happened. How is it possible Mashiach Hashem should be killed? And also there's an undercurrent here of Kabbalah Sadin, that if this happened, it must be the Ratzon Hashem. So those are really the three themes of kinos generally. Grief, horror, shock, and Kabbalah Sadin, accepting God's judgment. Continuing in number 10, Hatzvi Pasuk Yutes, Hatzvi Yisrael al bamosecha cholol, O splendor of Israel, upon your heights lie the slain, Eich naflu giborim, how is it possible that the mighty have fallen? How have the mighty fallen? So that's a phrase you find very often Arayom, in Israel, when anybody dies in battle, Eich naflu giborim, we'll have it on the sign. What's Svi Yisrael? So number of pshatim. Svi, splendor, is either reference to the splendor of Israel, meaning the Melech, Shaul, to Barbanel says, or to Eretz Yisrael. Look at the Metzudas Dov in number 14. The Svi. So the Gemara says, and we know that Eretz Yisrael is called Eretz HaTzvi, the land of the deer. What's the familiar reference? Yehoram Gaon had a famous song in the 70s, El Eretz Tzvi. Where's the culture here? El Eretz Tzvi, the land of the deer. So the Gemara says in Ksuvah Stav Kuf Yud Beis Amud Aleph, the Eretz Tzvi, why is it called the land of the deer? Just like the deer is swift afoot, so too Eretz Yisrael is swift to produce its crops. So here it means something else. Here it's a lament. Svi Yisrael. How could Eretz Yisrael, says the Metzudos, Hatzvi Yisrael es Eretz Hamuda v'chi roi she'iya chalal b'mosecha hey Maregoboa, the mountains of Gilboa, the heartland of Eretz Yisrael, really a beautiful place. How is it possible that this splendid place in Eretz Yisrael should hold the corpses of the Melech Yisrael and his princes? How could that be? Eich naflu sham giborim. That's the reference to Eretz Yisrael. Hatzvi b'Yisrael. Al tagidu v'gas. Al tevasu v'chutzos ashkelon. Pen tismachna b'nos plishtim. Pen talozna b'nos arilim. Lest the daughters of the plishtim rejoice. Lest the daughters of the uncircumcised jubilate over this event. That's also a very common Israeli idiom, adayom. If someone wants to keep a secret, they'll say, Al tagidu begat, based on David. You've heard that. Al tagidu begat, that's where it's from. Don't tell it to people who should not know. That's the pshat. Horeva gilboa, al tal, al matar lechem, uzdei trumos. Now again, in keeping with the style of the eulogy, he really curses the Hare Gilboa, as if they had a choice to refuse. There should be no dew, no rain upon you. You should not produce any crops, no fields of bounty. Kisham nigal magengi barim, magen shaol b'li Mashiach b'shamen. Because there, the shield of the mighty ones of Shaol, his shield, it was as if it was unanointed with oil. I mean, he was treated like a regular soldier. Al tagidu v'gat, don't compound the chil Hashem. Kisham nigal magen giborim. There, the armor of Shaul failed. So if he was killed, it must be, that's the Ratzon Hashem. That's God's will. So this is Tzidik Adin. Midam chalolim michelev giborim. From the blood of the slain, the fat of the mighty, keshes yonasa lo nasog achor. Yonasan's bow would not recoil anymore. He did not even kill at that battle. V'cherev Shaul lo soshuv rekam. The sword of Shaul would not return empty. But of course, it's euphemistic. In this battle, both the bow and the sword did return empty. The Malbim explains in number 15. Mitzar sheYonason hoya rove kashros. Yonason was the archer, and Shaul was the swordsman. And it's different types of warfare. He mentions you need both. The archer fights at a distance, so therefore he can kill many people. And if he sees it's not working out, so he could, or he's victorious, he could leave without endangering himself. Whereas the swordsman has to kill in hand-to-hand combat. So there, sometimes you can't kill. He mentions if the opponent is very fat, heavy, it's hard to stab him to death. So both are necessary. You have here essentially what he's saying is that there's a balance. Yonasan fought from a distance with his arrows. Shaul fought up close, right? You have the machine gun fire, which is closer, artillery fire, longer range, and they both failed. And here they were the leading warriors of a generation. Despite Yehonasan and Shaul being superior soldiers, they were, and comrades, you see, they had they balanced their techniques. Nevertheless, they failed. And this goes back to the shock portion of the eulogy. How is it possible that Keshes Yonason, he never failed? Cherev Shaul, he never failed. And here, in fact, they did. Another famous pasuk: Shaul v'Yonason, Shaul and Yonason, hanehavim v'hanehimim b'chayehem. They are beloved and pleasant in their lifetimes. Uv'mosav lo nifradu. In their deaths, they were not separated. Comrades. Minishorim kalu, swifter than eagles, me'arayos goveru, stronger than lions. This is Avarachim. This whole phrase was taken, put in Avarachimim, and in fact you find it also whenever there's a tzara, a national tzara, Jews are killed, these phrases are used as well. What's the pshat? So look at number 20 in the Barbanel again. Uvamosam lo nifradu. So again, it speaks highly of both of them. They didn't flee the battlefield. They fought with valor. They didn't, the Radak says, abandon the nation, even though they knew they would die in battle. So Barbanel says, Im heyos shemin esharim kalu, lolechas mimakom lumakom, ume arios gover b'mulchamo, even though they were swift, and they could have fled, and they were strong like lions, and they could have fought their way out, it's a great thing. There's always a fog of war, battles, fog of battles. People don't know what's going on. You see, there's always a great post-mortem after the wars, after the battles end, to figure out what happened, what went right, what went wrong. But here you see, no, Shaul and Yonason, they always knew what was going on. Always knew, and yet as swift as they were, as strong as they were, died. Ratzon Hashem, killed. Benos Yisrael Shul Bechenov, daughters of Israel, cry for Shaul. Hamal Bishchem Shanim Adonim Amalade Adi Zahav Aluvushchen. Cry for Shaul. Why? Because he clothed you in scarlet with finery, and he placed golden jewelry upon your clothing. What's this all about? So look at number 17, the Medrash Shmuel. Benos Yisrael Shaul Bechena. Why? Sir Rabbi Yehuda says, they cried for Shaul. Shebisho Shebalei Nyotzen L'milchama. When their husbands would go out to battle with Shaul, Hayazonim Afarnason, he would support them. Shaul would send home the money. And even more, Malbishon Shanim Adonim, he would give them scarlet finery, jewelry, nice clothing. Mikanein Tachshita Nonel L'guf Mudan. Jewelry is always only appropriate where the body is fit, where the body is healthy. So you see, the women love Shaul, so they will now lament his death. So that's one pshat. It's a different pshat altogether. But another aspect of Shaul. So Shaul really was a popular king. Something else, he had respect for Torah. Reb Nechemiah says, who are the Benos Yisrael? Sanhedrin. They would also cry for Shaul. When he'd hear a nice pshat in Torah, nice svara, He would kiss on the mouth the person who uttered it. So you see, the women loved Shaul, and he was beloved to the Talmidei Chachamim as well, and he loved them also. So Shaul was popular with the people for the right reasons. He knew how to take care of the home front, and with the Sanhedrin as well, he was a lover of Torah too. And now you come to the heart, really, of the eulogy. Eich naflu gibarim besochem milchama. How have the mighty fallen in the midst of battle? Yehonasan al b'mosecha chalol. Yehonasan slain upon the heights. Meaning again, the Mefarshim say, this shock. Because if you have the heights, the Mefarshim say, even the Chalashim can win from the heights. You always want the high ground. Except the Israelis who surrendered all the time to the enemy. But usually the army wants the high ground. It gives you an advantage. So Yehonasan, the great warrior, had the high ground. And Af al pi kein was killed. Tsar li alecha, achi Yehonasan. I grieve for you. I'm distressed over my brother Yehonasan. Na'amta li mod. You are so pleasant to me. Niflasa vascholi me'avas nashim. Your love was more wondrous to me than the love of women. This we discussed at length. We discussed Dovin Yehonasan a few months back. It was last year. No, a few months back. So you love me like a love of a woman, meaning complete altruistic love. They got no benefit from one another. No physical benefit. They just were souls that bonded on the highest level in terms of appreciation of the other's good qualities. That's what he means here. Ech naflu giborim vayovdu klei milchama. How have the mighty fallen? And the vessels, the weapons of war, have gone to waste. So this Eich naflu giborim, shock, grief, and recognition of the greatness of the warrior. Look at number 16. The Yalkut says, Eich naflu giborim, Rabbi Chanina, Rabbi Yonasan, Travaya Omrin, Mikan she'atzadikim, Kruyin klei milchama. You see, for him, the righteous are called weapons. And that's something that David exemplified in his life. To us it sounds like a novel idea, but it's really part of our ancient history. Our great people were great warriors. Avram Avinu went to war, Moshe Rabbeinu went to war, David HaMelech, others, they weren't just tzaddikim. There's no contradiction to being a tzaddik and a great warrior. Not mutually exclusive. This notion, 2 minutes, this notion will return to this aspect of tzidkus, which has really been suppressed in our people by centuries of exile. Summary, it's a beautiful elegy, a tribute to Shaul. Really what it accomplished was 2 things. First, it redeemed Shaul's honor in the eyes of the people after suffering such a humiliating, degrading death. And it also demonstrated the great magnanimity of David, which was essential in his efforts to reunite Klal Yisrael. Because he felt what David showed, that he really himself had no grievance. It's not a coup. It's unacceptable, the notion of a coup. It's unacceptable, the notion of killing Melech Yisrael. On the contrary, no matter what the king did to him personally, the king had traits which must be acknowledged and appreciated. Rabbag notes, Rabbag here, has I think 56 different Musar moments that come out of Shmuel Aleph. So he says here, number 53, number 18, Lodia she'en roi la'odam she'yismach ben foloivov. David taught them, it's unfitting, unseemly for a person to gloat over his enemy's death. Avol roi she'yechore ben afil asar v'godol. One should tremble over the death of a great officer in Israel. You have to accept that in fact is God's judgment. It's all B'yad Hashem, and that's Kabbalah Sadin. Now, David is ready to extend his rulership beyond Shevet Yehuda. We'll see next time he starts from Hebron, and then he moves to solidify his reign. Who's going to constitute the initial opposition? Who do you think? The followers of Shaul. They're still alive, including Avner and others. How David deals with Avner, and how he deals, in fact, with Ishbosheth, the surviving son of Shaul, who was made, anointed the king by Shaul's followers, how he deals with those conflicts. So that we'll discuss in the coming weeks. Okay.